Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Morning Show. The home team. No, it's both. It's the crossover.
Crossover. Step back.
Right here on 960theref.com.
All right, this is episode number 171 of the Crossover Podcast. David Johnston and Jeff Dantzler along with you. I'm from The Morning Show. Jeff from the home team, hence the name, the Crossover Podcast. There is some discussion. We might call it one day the Double Crossover Podcast, but as of right now, we're just going to leave it like it is. We will do the duty that lies nearest and keep things the same.
Well, that's exactly right, DJ. And when we take our Baroque and four in here, whether it's in the morning or whether it's in the afternoon, and we've been having to have some baphmatic baptisms by fire.
Yes.
And definitely some crossovers into the morning show, into the afternoon show. So it's always fun to do the crossover, the double crossover with you here. And man, what a lot to talk about, DJ. I mean, going back to the Lady Dogs winning in Knoxville, the men's team beating Kentucky, just a great weekend of NFL playoffs, the chaos that's going on with the Tennessee football program right now. It is a full plate as we head into Championship Sunday, taping here on a Wednesday morning.
Check that.
Thursday morning.
These
Monday holidays, I love them,
They throw me off all the time. Yes, so yes. So, of course, you can find us at 960theref.com, the great 960 The Ref app, which you can find in the App Store if you've got an iPhone, and Google Play for those of you with the Android. But we love the 960 The Ref app. In fact, Jeff, I had to drive up to see my parents on Sunday, and I listened to you call the Lady Dogs win over Ole Miss, and that it was about a two-hour drive and about a two-hour broadcast. It was perfect.
Yeah, it's nice when it syncs up like that. And that was a really nice win for the women. That was one of those, as we say in football a lot, a trap, because the women had won
it's
in Tennessee. It's a trap. And the Lady Dogs, again, as we tape here on a Thursday.
On a Thursday morning.
Yes. I was late for our Wednesday taping because, well, it felt like Tuesday. And then the women are playing at South Carolina on Thursday night. So that in-between game, and sometimes when that's the quote-unquote game you're supposed to win.
And you even asked Joni about it in the post game, and she said, yep, we know these are kind of trap games, and thought the Lady Dogs handled it great and got the win. And they'll have their hands full tonight at South Carolina, but – hey, let's go see what happens. And I will applaud the SEC for scheduling this game tonight, because this was supposed to have been played a couple of weeks ago, and because of COVID issues, I guess, with them, the game was scrapped. And Georgia was already over in Columbia and had to come back, so hopefully the Lady Dogs tonight will get to play the game.
Shouldn't that be worth a 10-point lead or something out of the gate? Right, we're going to spot you 10 since you've come over here twice. And so now, and I feel like this is a house money game for the Lady Dogs and for the guys coming off that win over Kentucky. Kentucky, this is...
Yeah, let's talk about the game last night, since that's fresh on everybody's minds. We'll, like you said, we'll get to Tennessee. We'll get to some Georgia football here in just a moment. But big win. I know this is going to sound like this is taken away from Georgia, and I don't mean for it to, but I was a little surprised at just how bad Kentucky looked. And Georgia certainly, I would think, had something to do with that. You like to say that too, but this is not the Kentucky teams that have rolled in here with John Wall and, just Anthony Davis.
DeMarcus Cousins.
Throw in some other ones too. This is this is a Kentucky team that they're 4-9. I know they've had some close losses, but I can see why.
No doubt about it, DJ. And I think, too, the guy they probably missed was a player who was originally committed to Georgia and Ashton Hagans.
Yeah.
You think, oh, gosh, if we'd have had him and Claxton and Edwards together, we might have won the whole thing. But and no doubt, it's a big win for Georgia. And any time Georgia beats Kentucky, and let's face it, anytime any of the quote-unquote traditional football schools beat Kentucky, it's a big deal. It had been
especially
a long time.
Especially when you've lost 14 in a row dating back to 2013.
That is exactly right, DJ. But
you don't want to have those long, long streaks in the series. And Kentucky has beaten Georgia 102 more times. That they have a 102-game lead in the series.
That's just unbelievable. But again, we're not alone with stats like that
Kentucky. In fact, to be honest with you, the Kentucky-Georgia basketball series is the same as the Kentucky-Georgia football series, just flip-flop the other way.
That's right. A greater number of games because forever we would play twice a year.
Right, but the percentages for winning are basically the same.
No, you're exactly right, DJ. But anytime Georgia can beat Kentucky, it's a big deal. It came in thrilling fashion. A severe wheeler somehow found a little seam, and P.J. Horn hit the game winner at the end. But I think it was one of those deals when Kentucky got up by 6 and by 7, there was one stretch. The Dogs were down 4. They make a tremendous block shot at the rim, go down and score on the other end to go up 6. And you're thinking, my gosh, the Dogs should have had it down to 2. Now you're down 6. But Kentucky couldn't extend, and give the Dogs a lot of credit for hanging around and not letting Kentucky push that up to 8, 9, or 10
yep.
points. And then all of a sudden, KD Johnson hits that long three. You get a bounce go your way, and things turn.
What a big lift he's been in his three games so far.
He certainly has been. And, you know, that was the one thing we were saying about this team, which has got a pretty good – that first seven is a pretty good group there, but we just didn't have that freshman impact. And now Johnson has been able to deliver that. So this is a good mix. The key, though, for this Georgia team to have a shot – to get to 500 or better in the league and finish in the top half of the league and maybe sniff around for a you-know-what, maybe a dance bid.
Georgia, is there an NIT this year?
I don't know. Georgia's got to beat Florida on Saturday. You got to follow this up because that was a killer with that loss to LSU. When you come out of the gates at 0-2 and you had a chance to be 1-1, and Dave, we've been through this in some tough baseball years before, when you're more than one under 500 – you just feel like that water's coming in the boat quicker than you can bail it out. So now if Georgia could beat Florida too, and I think we're catching them at a good spot because Florida's coming off a tremendous win against Tennessee on Tuesday
night. I totally
agree.
That was the first thing I thought of the other night was, hey, Florida's coming off a great win, and I like to be in the spot with teams coming off great wins. You can look at it two ways. Hey, they're playing great, they're on a roll, or – they might have a little bit of a letdown.
They could, but if Georgia can beat Kentucky and Florida, then all of a sudden you're saying, okay, now we're only one below in the league. You get a little bit of momentum going. But, DJ, you know, how many times have we been through, and again, just to use baseball, which is, less than a month away, you know, you come out, let's just say you get swept that first weekend. Then, well, we won 2 out of 3, but then you lose 2 out of 3. Next thing, you know, you're 3-6. It's like, oh, my gosh.
Boy.
You're digging and you're clawing, and it's so hard to come out of. But I think the win last night, obviously beating Kentucky is just huge, but it also – I think it gives you some light at the end of the tunnel that, hey, maybe we could do this. And the crazy thing for basketball, DJ, I brought this up with Joni. We were getting so much attention on the women's end with that win at Tennessee. First time we had won up there since December of 96. You got to celebrate that and capitalize on that as a program. But then at the same time, we had a game on Sunday. So now for the men, I mean, you're Georgia basketball, and this is one where thanks to – David, you know, the place,
COVID.
The vids, the place it and pack, because that would have been a classic. You beat Kentucky on a last second shot at home. That's what you dream about if you're a Georgia fan. And I'm sure Coach Crean has already turned the page thinking about Florida. But for the program, for recruiting, for attention around this state, you got to capitalize on that and seize that. And I think that's a delicate balance. In basketball.
I'm still not convinced, though, that like a situation like last night, where these guys for Kentucky, you know, when you're playing in flat arenas every night, even your own arena,
I agree.
Because
I think it
of
helps the
attendance,
guy.
this is, you know, that I think that works in your favor. They're not used to this kind of stuff. And I know everybody's dealing with the same conditions.
You're 100% right,
but
Dave.
When Kentucky rolls in, no matter
everywhere.
Who they're playing, they're pretty much they're either the biggest or second biggest game on that team's schedule every year. But this year with the just the attendance and everything, it's different.
They are – it is a traveling show. When Kentucky goes to Auburn, biggest game, it's packed.
It's Alabama, like Bama football.
Alabama, biggest game, it's packed.
Yeah.
Ole Miss, everywhere they play. So I think that's a great point. When they're going to a place with 1,500, 1,800 fans, it feels different. That hit me, and I'm sorry to bring this back to a Lady Dogs thing once, but we played UConn on MLK Day back in – in 1997. So we had both been to the Final Four the previous 2 years, and the place, it was kind of a first come, first serve. It's an hour and a half before the game. The place is packed. And we had a point guard named Rachel Powell. She came out bouncing and just kind of looked around and goes, oh my God, look at all these people. And I thought, we're in trouble. Because for Connecticut, that's them. Every game, they wound up pounding. I think that's a great point you make about Kentucky.
And again, every team's having to deal with it, but there are certain teams that it's different. And I think for Kentucky, but still, it's just – obviously, this isn't the best Kentucky team that they've had in a while.
Sure.
But just to snap that streak in the series and get a little momentum, and the Dogs have now won two in a row in the SEC, and you certainly – like to see that KD Johnson has come in and finally been able to get on the court and given Georgia a big lift. He scored in double digits in all three of his games that he's been out there. That's the part of it that I take away from all of this.
I can
understand Kentucky's down, but still Georgia needed to win that game.
And you know, there's shows in Lexington and in the Bluegrass right now that they're saying, yeah, okay, Georgia got the experience, but look at the recruiting rankings.
Yeah.
There's nobody on Georgia's roster we would have even recruited, and we've got all these five stars in here, but it's just not clicking for them.
Hey,
right
we'd
now.
we'd be losing our minds if they had beaten us in football.
No doubt.
Yeah. We're going crazy too.
It's the
same thing, and good win. Speaking of the SEC East, so I'm going to switch it over here to football, Jeff. With Jeremy Pruitt now out at Tennessee, South Carolina has already made a change for their head coach. Vanderbilt has made a change with their head coach. So of the other six teams in the division, half of them are starting over. Missouri, Florida, and who am I leaving out here? Missouri, Florida.
Obviously
and,
the Dogs.
And the Dogs, but who's the –
Kentucky
the,
with
Kentucky.
Stoops,
thank
yeah.
you, with Stoops.
Yeah.
Thank you. With so Missouri, Kentucky, and Florida not starting over. Missouri seems like maybe the team that might be as much on the rise as just about anybody in the East. But where do you put the SEC East right now with what's going on in the conference? And Tennessee, I mean, this is going to be – interesting to see how this plays out, not just like for the next few weeks or months, but maybe for the next couple of years.
Yeah, it really hit them. And I saw on the wire last night that Henry Toa, who I think is the best player on
the
their
portal.
Team. Yeah, and he, you know, when they made the goal line stand at the end of the half,
he's a very good player.
And Eric Gray, who's an excellent running back, those guys are leaving. I think Tennessee, they went through such a stretch in football and basketball where they made some bad hires and they're paying off coaches, trying to get set. Dave, it's my belief they wanted to part ways with Jeremy Pruitt and they did not want to pay him the big amount of money, and they fell on the sword, and especially the way the NCAA is these days. I think this is one of the more stunning stories. When Jeremy Pruitt was hired there, I think for a lot of us, the thinking was kind of not – if but when something scandalous was going to happen in Knoxville, and it did, and they're in a bad spot right now. Now, for Tennessee, listen, if they get the right guy in there, especially with the portal now, it's a lot easier to get well than it used to be.
Yeah.
But you've got to think for at least a year or two, this is dealing them huge blow.
The thing is like, okay, I kind of felt like schools had gotten in the mindset if they felt like they were in trouble with the NCAA, they were not going to fall on the sword.
No,
they were going to make the NCAA with a smaller staff, not as many people that can go out and investigate. They were going to make the NCAA prove it. And you know, we've even seen here in Athens over the years
of
where falling on the sword was not the right call.
Like the A.J. Green deal.
Exactly.
Oh.
Exactly. And even and that was a smaller one compared to, obviously, the basketball situation,
sure,
too.
Sure, sure.
But Tennessee, as soon as they started, from what it sounds like, as soon as there were as soon as they – this was going back to November, where they found – where they started thinking things weren't right, they bring in – A group of attorneys and investigators that have NCAA experience and work for the NCAA, I think they basically just been in Knoxville for the last couple of months, and this is where all this came from. So not only they fall on the sword, they invited it on themselves, and there's still a chance that they're not going to get out of having to not pay Jeremy Pruitt. That's why I'm like, this is just a weird story, and it's just incredible to see where they have fallen in 20 years. And 20 years is not, I mean, that's a long time, but that's not a huge amount of time when you look at the overall scope of how things are in college sports.
No, you're right, David. They had a horrible decade, last decade. When Pruitt came in there, we've all got friends who cover other schools and who work for other schools, and I'd heard some things about, he came in and got rid of some people that had been around there for a long, long time. And, you know, stuff like that. Well, as long as he wins, but then you start realizing that there's that erosion of support from within. And if you're going to act the way
from a hire that didn't look great in the beginning.
No, it did
anyway.
Not. And then with Fulmer being in there too, I think we couldn't help but think. And there are a lot of stories that came out of Athens when he was here for his 2 years. You don't know how much of it is true, but there was a lot of fire with that smoke, let's just say. So you're thinking, okay, with Fulmer there, who seemed to have sabotaged the previous AD, you're thinking, okay, it's Fulmer waiting for the scandal and then trying to get in there to be the head coach like Barry Alvarez when Wisconsin went to the Rose Bowl that time.
I still remember the late Johnny Majors at the Athens Touchdown Club in 92 or 93, calling Fulmer a fat ass.
Yeah, that too.
That's what he called him.
Yeah.
He goes, is this mic on? Like, yeah.
Yes, it is,
and then
sir.
He didn't stop him from saying that.
No, it's a bad situation up there for the football program right now. I know Kevin Steele's the acting head coach. Do they name him the head coach? The other two names, and this was a couple of weeks before the Pruitt deal was final, the other two names I was hearing out there were Tom Herman and Gus Malzahn.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, you're talking about experienced coaches, and obviously something was funky with the Texas deal.
Yeah.
And that they don't part ways, then they play great in the bowl game, and then they do and hire Sarkisian that day. It was just a little odd. And I think for Gus, you know, say what you will, I thought he did a good job at Auburn. The guy beat Alabama three times as the head coach at Auburn.
In the era of Saban 6 national titles.
That is exactly right. Yeah. So that's and he was the OC when they beat him in the Cam Al from Dadeville, where they put just to flash.
Yeah.
If I could have just flash forwarded there for about 2 minutes to see the look on those Bama fans' face when they blew the lead, seeing a Cam Newton jersey on Bear Bryant's statue.
Oh my God.
That had to be epic. But anyways, so he was a part of big wins over Alabama. So I wouldn't count either one of those guys out. Another factor, DJ, I want to get your take on that with Herman, could be Texas obviously made a bad decision with Rick Barnes.
Yeah.
And Texas basketball program has struggled. Tennessee's doing great. I know they lost to Florida. They got the best team in the league. Could they try and catch lightning in a bottle twice with a fired Texas coach?
Well, what about – I'd ask you about Malzahn.
I think it would be a good hire for them.
To me, it feels like the coach that Tennessee might need to hire here is the guy that's going to be a little bit of a caretaker through some very choppy water.
Yes.
Matt Luke did it at Ole Miss.
Yes, he
and
did.
That was a very, very tough situation for him. I'm glad he's in Athens.
I'm glad
we've got him.
Matt did it. Was like he did too good a job and got the bar raised because he was just going to take care of his alma mater. They said, okay,
exactly.
You got it. And then, okay, we got to build.
Right. Could you have a Rich Brooks type situation where you get a
veteran
older experienced veteran coach that can get you through and then you hand it over to
– or do they just stay with Kevin Steele?
But see, he's maybe the Rich Brooks that I'm thinking
of. He could be.
He's got head coaching experience. He's a Tennessee guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's a veteran of the SEC. Maybe that's the guy you go with and just try to do the best you can over – a situation where you don't know what's coming with the NCAA.
I think big picture, when schools are looking around, I think a couple of things. There's not always going to be that magic grand slam, like, oh, this is our special coach. It's just not, you know, certainly we feel that way with Kirby. He and Mary Beth went to school here. You know, we feel like this is a guy that can be here for, if Coach Dooley's 25, if the equivalent of that is 15 now, I hope Kirby's here 25, 30 years. We feel like we've got our guy. Obviously, Alabama has got their guy. Maybe that hire's not always there. In my opinion, I think the best thing you can do is say, hey, who's the best coach out there we can get?
Yeah.
And for a lot of these programs, the recruiting, in many ways, it's going to take care of itself if you're doing things the right way. Now, if you're talking about getting to the very, very top, that's when the recruiting, it really makes a difference. But if Tennessee gets a good coach in there.
Well, when you ask about Herman, he feels to me like a guy, like he might, if they could win 4 or 5 games for a couple of years and things look good, he'd bolt.
He could.
And that, you know, that would be his prerogative. That's why I would be a little bit hesitant on maybe hiring someone like him.
No, I agree. And obviously,
and they've had some rough hires.
How about
over the
Donnie
last...
Tindall at men's hoops? Guy was there for 1 year and he had like 80 show cause things from Southern Mississippi.
That he already had out there.
It was unbelievable. Yeah. So, nobody's feeling sorry for him up on Rocky Top, that's for sure. But it's just.
And then you like, all right, so are they really, are they really putting cash in McDonald's bags?
I don't know.
I mean, if that's the case,
that's
it's like
stuff from the 50s.
No, I mean, really? In this day and age of Bitcoin?
I mean, it's
that's putting stuff in fast food bags.
It's like one of the stories that Coach Hartman told me once, and Coach McGill. I was actually sitting in a room with Coach Hartman and Coach McGill. They start telling the stories when Fran Tarkenton had committed here. A couple other schools were sniffing around. Of course, Fran from Athens. They took him, the poet laureate of the Georgia Bulldogs, Harold Red Walker, had this cabin up in the mountains, and he went up there. Fran Tarkenton did for like a week before signing day, just so nobody could get to him. Stories
like that. Kind of like what Clemson did with John Johnson.
Oh, those bastards. But the Tennessee thing, they are a mess right now. My advice to them would be just go out and hire the guy that you feel like is the best football coach. If you're doing good, the recruits are going to come. Now, are they going to come to the level where they can beat the Dogs, Florida, and Alabama? That's the next step. You got to get.
They
got to
worry about beating South Carolina and Kentucky and Vandy.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
that's exactly right.
If they're worried
right.
about Georgia and Florida and Alabama, they are in a bad headspace.
And that's not to say that something couldn't happen on a given day and funny things.
Right.
But
I mean, on a consistent basis, not on a one time. Like what South Carolina did here last year.
But realistically.
Yes, realistically, over a 5 to 10 year period, where are you against this program? Where are you against that program? And where are you against the next program? Against Alabama, Tennessee's got a big zilch.
Oh, God.
Nothing.
Never beaten Satan.
Against Georgia, it's basically.
We're 9-2 the last 11 years with two games we should have won.
Exactly.
And they beat Florida, since Urban Meyer.
Right. So, that's the thing. You've got to, as you always like to say, how is the wording? Analyze the situation, it actually is.
You got to have realistic expectations.
Yes.
And I think, for some schools, and that's not to say, I think you can build quicker now than you used to be able
especially with the portal.
Yes. And, let's say you get in there and they get somebody, and this goes for any school, all of a sudden, hey, there's this guy, I like this offense he's running. You get that special player up there, then other guys want to go play with him. You can turn it a lot more quickly than you used to be able to, but it's definitely left a big open void in the SEC, and I agree with something you said. Mark Stoops has gotten Kentucky to a point where they're consistent. They're 4-6 this year, then their bowl win. That translates to like a 7-5.
Yeah.
In a regular year.
When you're not playing any non-conference games.
I think Missouri's the team that's saying, hey, could we get up there and finish second or third this year?
And they are one of the few teams that we'll see in the fall that are bringing a quarterback
back.
That's huge, and that's why the JT Daniels return is so big for Georgia. But, I mean, that game against Clemson is gigantic, and we saw Ungalale play really well against Notre Dame, and I guess he was in another game. But
yeah, he started a couple.
But technically they're not bringing their quarterback back. So, yeah, I mean, this is one of the things where it's setting up, which leads me into my next topic of the position maybe that we're going to talk about a lot during the offseason is the defensive backfield. And now Charlton Warren has left. And good for him. That's awesome. He's the defensive coordinator at Indiana now.
And, and he's a guy who could be back here someday.
Sure. I mean, he went from a position coach to a coordinator's job in a Power 5 conference. Good for him.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're hiring that next coach, and we can all go find lists of potential candidates. I mean, there's 100 probably qualified candidates out there. Are you looking for, and I know people get mad at me for saying this, are you looking for a recruiter that can coach or a coach that can recruit? Or obviously you want both, but what do you think is a bigger deal?
Coach who can recruit, right,
yeah.
Dad?
And yeah.
let's call it like it is, too. Georgia's head coach played defensive back.
Yep.
He coached defensive backs. He was a coordinator who coached defensive backs. He was a head coach at Coach DBs. Like when Mel left before the Texas Sugar Bowl, Kirby coached the DBs. In fact, I ran into Mary Beth one day. She goes, oh, my God, Kirby's lost like 8 pounds because he's out there running around right. with the DBs.
And
every
he was
day.
Loving every second
and
of it.
It kind of takes you back to your roots there. So I think especially at a school like Georgia, you get a good coach, and then the recruiting, if you're good, if you're winning with the talent Georgia has, that should – again, I don't want to say take care of itself. It might not get you the most elite class, but you're still going to get a lot of really good players. But it is crazy. That's the one position where you look from what Georgia's got coming back at kicker, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, with Sawyer coming back, what the O-line's got coming back, the D-line, linebacker, secondary.
Yeah.
It's where we lost, so
which
much. And our position coach, too. It's crazy.
Well, which is funny, and I say this jokingly, that because Secret Agent Muschamp has been spotted around the facility. Now, granted, his son is part of the Georgia football program. I get that. But it is kind of funny in a sense. It's like, all right, we've sent him to Florida. He did great work there. We sent him to South Carolina. He did great work there. We don't need him to go to Tennessee right now. They're a mess all on their own. Does it, you know, would you bring in a guy like that? But I don't think that's what this is setting up as.
I wouldn't think so. Plus, what's Will getting, like between 12 and 15 million at South Carolina?
Yeah.
So I don't know if it might be a deal where he might come in as one of the quote unquote analysts or stuff.
Yeah.
But I would think Will would either want to take a year off or go be a DC somewhere. And the other thing too with Will, he is high energy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some of the
too
antics,
much in some instances.
I agree 100%. Yeah. And that's where I think kind of with Kirby, he needs a bit of a contrarian, I think, when it comes to some of these spots. And, obviously you want coaches who've got fire, but I thought Mel Tucker was great, that he was very calm and laid back there. So I think that would probably be something that Kirby would be looking at. And that's another thing with Matt Luke, I think. And with Coach Luke being a head coach with the experience that he's had, that's somebody else, kind of like with Mel, who's been in Kirby's shoes, that he can bounce things off of about stuff that we have no idea about.
Yeah.
Just things that a head coach deals with.
You need to have that bench coach like they have in baseball.
That's a good call. Like, hey, listen, we might need to start getting that lefty up. Or,
right.
Hey, we're up two.
Yeah.
You know, our center fielder can hit, but he doesn't have a great glove. Let's think about getting NCR Day ready to go in.
If
they're
bunting here, they've got so and so that's two up. Next, but you know, just things to think about. Because in baseball, you've heard me tell the story many times. We're watching the game and we're calling the game, and it seems like it's going in slow motion. But when you're in the dugout, it's not
right.
And every sport's like that.
No doubt.
Yeah, to have that, like we say, bench coach. Maybe that's something that you certainly think about with a hire like this. But I agree with you. It's the coaching aspect of it will be a big hire here for Georgia.
And the thing with Kirby too, and obviously he learned this from the very best in Saban, who's the turnover in his staff that he's had, and they never skip a beat. So I would think for every coach out there, even when you got your staff. He's got a list of guys of names. So
absolutely,
we're gonna get somebody good. Are they gonna be better than Charlton Warren? I mean, who knows? But we're gonna get a good coach. And here's the thing: if they're not, they'll only be here 1 year, and then we'll go out and get somebody good. So he's got a list out there, and I would.
But your point about Kirby being a former DB defensive coach, mm-hmm. I mean, that's huge for this hire and this position, because going to need a lot of maybe a little bit of extra attention, and it's a huge, huge spring for that position. And hopefully we'll have a semblance of spring. It may not be exactly what we're used to, but hopefully we'll have a semblance of something. Before we get out of here.
Yes, sir.
Georgia baseball coach Scott Strickland is always, every time we talk to him over the last few months, he goes out of his way, it almost seems like, to thank Greg Sankey for his leadership and what he's done in the SEC. And you know what he's getting at is, like, we've got a baseball schedule. We're not delaying our season. We're playing every game. Maybe some things will be a little bit different in the dugout, the rosters, that kind of thing. But you can tell he's very, very appreciative of the fact that we only played, what, 18 games last year, and the whole season got shut down. They're not going to let that happen again. And the Georgia baseball schedule is out. May affect us a little bit differently with traveling and that kind of thing, like it has for basketball. But how great is it to see a full-on 56-game schedule starting when it was going to start?
It's awesome, DJ, and I will praise the commissioner. I'll shout it from the hills like the Sound of Music there. But to get the
I was about to sing. I'm not going to do that.
The stadiums,
I was going to drop in a little Julie Andrews.
The stadiums are alive with the sound of rabid fans. Okay, it's not packed.
Not but quite, but close enough. The ping of the bat will still be there.
It'll be fantastic. And, you know, to get – close to a full basketball schedule in on both sides, you know, to have all the sports competing, and to get that full 56. And you can tell, God knows the last thing I want to talk about is like March 12th, but
hey, you can go watch a 30 for 30.
Oh, my God. That's tell you what, I'm going to give you a list of my bad breakups and bad Georgia football losses. Why don't you run one on that, too? So, anyways, Commissioner Sankey was caught off guard when he learned on air that the College World Series had been canceled. Mm-hmm. He's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. What happened to this 2-week thing? So he understands the importance of it. And I think there's something, too, about – and granted, the college season starts a little earlier than the major league season. But there is that baseball spring rebirth. There's something that goes with that. And baseball was the sport that was so – and I get it with basketball in the NCAA tournament. But for SEC fans, for the SEC – for most fan bases, baseball was the sport that took the biggest brunt of it. And I know all the other spring sports, I get it with tennis, with golf, swimming, with the championships are going to be here. Softball, everybody got hit. But it just felt like baseball was the one that really, really got smacked the most out of all of this. So I agree. Looking at that 56-game slate, and there might be some things that –
may not play them all, but no, still.
Maybe something gets shifted. It's like, hey, oh, gosh, we can't go to Mercer on Tuesday, but Kennesaw can come here. Then we're going to flip around. That's fine, because we have proven that everything doesn't have to be so set in stone.
You can schedule a football game in 2 days.
Amen.
You can certainly do a lot of things scheduling-wise in baseball.
Amen. So I can't wait to get back out there. I've loved every second of basketball, and I'll predict for you and me, I mean, it's going to be a little emotional getting back out mm-hmm. there, because I went up in the stadium a couple times to – I had to tape a piece and to get some equipment. It was hard walking in the press box up there thinking about that the season was basically a third or fourth of the way over, and what was going on, and the excitement, and then everything that happened that turned the world upside down. So – when we get back in there, for whatever reason, baseball feels like the sport more than any that will signal a rebirth here, and I can't wait for it.
A rebirth.
The
we started the show talking about doing the duty that lies near us, and we're gonna finish the show basically in the same theme, or with the same theme, and get back out there. Yeah, this is what the world is right now, the Phoenix. Got to get going again.
What did Frank Costanza say? I'm like a Phoenix rising up from Arizona.
Well said.
Well said. So well, I enjoyed it, DJ. Always a pleasure, my friend.
Yes, it's been fun. Did we cover everything?
I think we did.
I wanted to make sure we hit
everything. I don't even know what day it is.
Yes, you've got the Lady Dogs tonight, so don't forget.
Let me Siri, set alarm clock.
Here, normally, somebody, you'd be in Columbia right now getting ready for the game.
I know.
It's so weird.
It's bizarre.
It's really weird. But, yeah, a lot of enjoyed it. And I don't want to, you know, a lot of folks take pleasure in when your rivals are down. And that certainly is the fun of college sports. I mean, I get that. I understand that. The Schadenfreude, if you want to throw that term out there, too. To me, and look, Tennessee being down in football doesn't bother me one bit. I just find it just historically just interesting how, and this might just be boring to people listening, but just like how you can see a program, a school, just 20 years ago. I dreaded when we'd have to play Tennessee because they were going to kill us.
I know.
And now look how things have changed. I mean, it's not that long. I mean, it's a generation, but you and I were having this conversation earlier in the week about how Georgia's going to probably catch them in all-time wins.
We're only 10 behind.
I know.
Now,
and that used to 10 was a lot.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Now it doesn't seem like that's like if you go
we might get there in 3 years.
If you go 10-2, and they go 5-7 or 6-6. You've chopped four or five off of that.
No doubt. You know, the other school like that, and we can hit this next week as well, but and they haven't had the scandal around, is Nebraska.
Right.
They were, for our lifetime,
yeah.
Let's say until the 21st century, and you could split hairs, this school then, that school there, but from basically 1970 through 1999,
yeah.
3 decades,
yeah.
I would say they were number one.
Sure.
And now they're...
And they're more of a maybe just an example of how the demographics of things have changed.
I agree.
You said, it's not a scandal. It's not a...
It's a slow erosion for them.
Exactly. Of being in a state where
it
you don't have
like,
a huge recruiting ground.
And then, you know, the places they used to go to have to recruit, the schools in those states. You know,
yeah.
But like 2 or 3 years ago, Troy beat them, and I saw the score flash. Like, that's didn't even make you blink an eye.
But a Tommy Frazier from Florida...
Oh, he's not going to Nebraska anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You look at a lot of the great players they've had. I guess most of the homegrown guys were like linemen and that kind of
thing.
But
Frazier, Phillips, Irving Fryer, Mike Rozier, Turner Gill, all those guys were from out of state.
Yeah. So it is interesting. We definitely have to talk about that. All right, thanks so much for joining us here on the Crossover Podcast. Again, 960theref.com, the great 960 The Ref app, which you can find in the App Store on iPhone and Google Play on Android. Jeff's got to travel all the way over to the stadium to get ready for the road game tonight for the Lady Dogs. But best of luck to them as they play at South Carolina. We'll be back along with you next week. Thanks so much for joining us. He's Jeff Dantzler from the home team. I'm David Johnston from The Morning Show. And this is the Crossover Podcast here on 960 The Ref and the 960 The Ref app.
You've been listening to the Crossover on 960theref.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.